Our readings today are actually three snippets from the vast literature on what is called work-life balance. First paragraph by Robert Brooks, PhD. But even if you don't have much control over the hours you have to work, you can ask yourself, in what other ways am I bringing greater enjoyment into my life? Focus your time and attention on things you can control. This piece of the reading is by Susan M. Heathfield. Work-life balance enables employees to feel as if they are paying attention to all of the important aspects of their lives. It occurs when employees experience the flexibility of a workplace that allows them to pursue all components of a healthy life. Because many employees experience a personal, professional, and monetary need to achieve, work-life balance is challenging. Employers can create a work environment in which work-life balance is expected, enabled, and supported. They retain outstanding employees to whom work-life balance is important, like parents. And finally, one sentence from an organization called Mental Health America: more than one in four Americans describe themselves as super stressed. Now, we've all heard about work-life balance, the articles, the TED Talks, even the entire books about how to balance work and life. And a couple of problems come to my mind right away whenever I hear this phrase. One is the idea that these are equal. Like if you put a fulcrum right here and you had work here and life here, there's a possibility they would balance. And then also the idea that work is separate from the rest of life, not part of life at all. Neither is true, at least it's best if they're not. Work is a part of our life. It is not something during which we can easily turn off who we are, our values, our concerns, although some people would like to keep it shut off from the rest of their lives because it's so unhappy or unfulfilling. Nevertheless, our lives are our lives. All that is our life is one piece, just as we just sang, although it may be difficult to feel that it is a gift and can be used well. And then there's also that implication that work is about half of what we do, which if we work 80 hours a week of the 168 life grants us, it is. If we keep our work to 40 hours, lovely thought, then it's just a quarter of those hours. But since we spend another quarter to a third asleep, even with strict discipline around work time, keeping it to that 40 hours a week, it's a very big chunk of our lives. And then we want to squeeze everything else into this half. All our relationships, maybe being a life partner, a parent, a child, a grandparent, a sibling, a friend, member of communities like this one, a neighbor, a citizen, and then all the other things that we do in our life, for our leisure, for our continued learning. All of that has to fit into the half that isn't work. So one form of balance is to integrate these things a little more. Say, to have meaningful relationships at work. There's no reason all of our relationships that give us meaning have to be in the non-work piece of our life. If we're partners engaged in a worthwhile activity during our work hours, then maybe those relationships can be very deep to us. And of course, we may form friendships there as well. And then there's meaning in the work itself. Not something that we do in the other half of our lives. That's where I have my meaningful, my real self, in my non-work life, but letting work be an expression of who we are and what we want to create in the world. Well, that's a wonderful vision. I think that this kind of work is a privilege and a rarity. In a nutshell, it is work with hope, work that brings us closer to the life we dream about. I've reflected many times how fortunate I was that I not only grew up with the privileges of parents who could and could afford and encouraged me to have all sorts of opportunities to learn what I wanted to learn, to pursue the kind of work I wanted to pursue, that I not only had a social location with a certain level of wealth and whiteness of my skin that would allow me to do many of the things I wanted to do, but that I discovered this idea at a very early age, that work could be woven into one's whole life, that I could choose a job that enacted my values, that did not feel like something I just did to earn my daily bread. I discovered all that before I had much formal education, and that's a very lucky thing. Not many of us have that experience. And then if we do have that experience, we may not be able to act on it. I find it very helpful to reflect on Coleridge's words, that what we need from our work is hope. It's not always evident until we don't have it. We may hope for any number of things from the work we do, but we hope for something. And work that sustains that kind of hope makes all the difference, makes it possible to live a life of balance. So what are some of the things we hope for, and how's our work doing at bringing us closer to them? Or if you are retired, how did your work do at bringing us closer to them? And what can you learn from that that could help us shape a society for today's workers? Well, I begin first with a story of work that brings little hope at all. This, the line that I shared as our centering words forms the title of a book, a novel by Kamala Markandaya, Nectar in a Sieve. It tells the life of a hardworking peasant woman in India, her family, the things that befall them. And that title is so apropos because there is so little hope that she can maintain against grinding poverty. There is so little margin for any error or accident in her life and the lives of those she cares about, that the hard work they do is done each day just to survive that day, and then begins again the next day and the next, always just working for no hope beyond that life, only for survival. It is probably the case that most people who have worked in this world, in our lifetimes, and in the history of humanity, have had exactly that situation. They work only to live with little hope of work getting them anything else. Most people don't mind working hard, I find. They just want to gain some ground, some possibility of one day I will be able to rest before I die. I'm earning enough for a period of retirement when others will care for me. Some rest each day. In these circumstances, without any of that, the nectar that work may bring us slips away as if it's drawn in a sieve. Over and over, people dip that vessel in and gain nothing. Then, of course, many work not out of any hope for themselves, but for their children, that if they work enough, their children will gain some time, some opportunity of education, some leisure, some possibility of pursuing something better. This is a classic immigrant story. The great-grandparent or grandparent or parent who worked tirelessly so that we could have a better life. Many of us know that story from somewhere in our family. Working two jobs, working long hours, being able to do little except bring home something that would allow their children to go to school and have something better. We can restore the hope that is lacking in lives like the ones told by Kamala Markandaya by pressing for better conditions, a livable wage for everyone, enough of a compensation that some rest is built in, that it is not just toil and toil and toil until you are used up. And another place that this is shining out in our society, especially these last months and last years, but for a long time, is, of course, in the system that we call immigration. It's barely a system. So vivid here in California. There's a great cruelty of a system in which we, United States citizens, can literally not eat without laborers from other countries working in our fields and factories. And so the way we have our immigration arranged, they are absolutely essential. There are not enough legal papers for everybody to come with documentation, so illegal immigration is absolutely essential. And then those who do come and work are punished and reviled for doing it. This is a system built on hopelessness. It exploits people's hopes of something better, being able to gain just enough ground, send back just enough money, or maybe return home between seasons or after several years, and then crushes that hope by making things so difficult for them. Just as an aside, I have this fantasy when I'm ruler of the universe, in which all undocumented immigrants in this country will cease work for 1 week straight. It's really hard to do, you know? You could organize that kind of strike, but people need to eat. They need to keep their jobs. Imagine no work from undocumented immigrants for 1 week. No food being planted or harvested, processed in the factories that are run almost entirely on undocumented immigrant labor. Old people and children sitting without changes to their clothes or care. Economists and politicians left, right, and center would beg for mercy by day three. Anyway, that's not what we have. We have a system that's trying to run without hope. So we can restore that hope by working for immigration reform, by changing to a system that is actually sustainable and not built on using people up. Moving up the economic ladder here to people who work but can't afford to buy a home or leave an area such as this one because they can no longer even rent a home, this is another level of struggles with hope that I hear all the time. I'm sure you do as well. Maybe you are such a person, maybe you talk to such a person who must drive 2 to 4 hours a day to go where there are wages and then return to a place where the rent is actually affordable at those wages. So these are folks who are doing more than surviving, more than just work, 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 and on to the next thing the next day, but not much more. They have bigger hopes than that. They have hopes of being able to live and work in the same place, maybe even being able to buy a home and have the stability that that brings, and those hopes are trampled daily. We can restore that hope by examining our political choices and enacting housing policies that will allow people to hope realistically for a life where they work, to not be told day in, day out that their dreams are untenable. And also, farther up the economic ladder, this is the territory where those work-life balance articles are mostly speaking. To people with pretty good compensation, people with a lot of flexibility in their work, people with white-collar jobs and often with managerial jobs. I'm looking at the kinds of struggles with hope that I hear about oftentimes in this congregation and in our wider community. Because, you know, the things that they're suggesting in these articles tend to be stuff like, well, put your meetings in the morning so that you can pick up your child once in a while in the afternoon or go to a parent-teacher conference. Well, the idea of having a job, first of all, that has meetings, where that's a major part of your work, and where you have the power to set the meetings and leave early, that's a lot of privilege, which shouldn't be privilege, but is rare. But there among that level, we have folks who can't make time for family very easily. That's what people are talking about usually, right? When they're balancing work and life. Life is family, the most important thing to folks outside their work. And the best balance that they can manage might be exemplified by a man in one of those articles who told his kids that looking at his smartphone during dinner, which they complained about, was the way he could manage to be home with them. That was what was offered as a way to balance. Well, I'll bring my work to the dinner table. And I think what we need to restore hope there is something that I was lucky enough to experience as a child, but has become very rare, and that's Sabbath. Maybe that's not the intent of Sabbath, but that's how it played out in my family. So the way my family honored the Sabbath, which was in a conservative Jewish way, was there were certain things that we couldn't do between Friday sundown and Saturday dark. And certain things that we promised each other we wouldn't do, and that enabled us to do other things. So a couple of the key things I realize now that were prohibitions for Sabbath in my family was we could not spend money, and we could neither drive nor ride in a vehicle. Now, I was a young woman, a teenager, through a lot of these years that my family was observing this way. And so you think of the weekend of a teenager who cannot spend money on Saturday until dark, nor go anywhere farther than walking distance. There are some disadvantages to that. But one of the great advantages is what it meant was Sabbath was family time. People might come to our house. We might go to other people's houses. We often went to walk to somebody else's house after our services on Saturday morning. And they were very sociable times. But it wasn't a time we could scatter hither and yon, because how would we do that? And how would we pay for the movies if we wanted to go? Now, that was a particular religious and cultural phenomenon, but I think we can restore that hope in the wider community by pressing for humane work environments, for a reasonable number of hours, for example. If your employer consistently needs 60 hours from you and 60 hours from your partner on your project, well, that's 120 hours, which tells me that your employer needs three people to do that job, not two. Maybe we could stop making workers bear that cost. And then I'm thinking of the struggle for hope experienced by those who can maybe do all these things, who have some flexibility in their job, to have time with their families, who have enough resources, enough compensation to have vacation time and education time and leisure time and retirement time. And yet they cannot envision work that does all those things for them and also enacts and affirms their values. This is a poverty of hope that is endemic in Silicon Valley. I hear over and over from those who feel that they must put what they care most about aside for those 8 or more hours a day that they work. And then they go home and try to create in their families, in their faith communities, in their neighborhoods, the kind of world that their workplaces are doing nothing to promote. In fact, that their workplaces make difficult to bring into existence. We can restore that hope by supporting each other in living our values, in recognizing new choices we could make, even if we were not lucky enough to discover those possibilities at age 18. New choices that perhaps over time would help us to make work a seamless part of life, so that we no longer have to check our passions and convictions at the office door. Can we imagine a world where people can enact their values in their work, where work allows time for family and the other things we value the most, where there is hope that later in one's life and in one's children's lives, things will be better, where there is more than just survival. Can we imagine a world where no work feels hopeless, where no one feels, I am working hard and drawing up the sweet nectar of work over and over in a sieve? If we can imagine a world where everyone who works hard can gain what they dream of from the labor of their hands and their minds, if we can imagine that, I believe we can build it. In honor of all of those who have struggled to make our work and our lives what they are, we celebrate this Labor Day. So may we do.